Right now it is time for the Berkshire Edge on air. You can find the Berkshire Edge 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, online, berkshireedge.com. And every week we're joined by Marcy and David, and I think they're both there right now. Good morning. Now we can get started, I do believe. Marcy and Dave, are you there?
Yes.
Very bizarre. The first time I had you, I lost you, and then I tried like three or four times to reach you and kept getting an answering machine.
We kept going to the voicemail. The voicemail that said you were on the other line.
We were on the phone, so we were waiting for you.
Well, I don't know how the phone, how that line held.
Did you hear us?
Because,
no.
Yeah, because,
no, we didn't.
Yeah, if you didn't hear us, that means that the line was cut off.
So if you ever are doing a show with us and don't hear us, hang up.
That means something happened.
That's what we did finally.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, well, anyway.
Anyway,
happy Thanksgiving.
Oh, here we go.
Did you get a cold along the way?
Yes.
Okay.
You can hear.
Well, thank you for being a trooper and coming on. Oh, good, Dave.
Yeah, we are both
the minute we took a break, we got sick.
That is what happens.
Well, Gesundheit in advance. There.
Yes,
okay.
Thank you. And we will have Gesundheit eventually. Right.
All right. So you had a couple of stories about a class action suit, which I actually read on air and gave you guys credit about. The electrical utility companies, Eversource, and, of course, which serves Connecticut. And Avangrid, is that their name?
Avangrid.
I don't know how you pronounce it. Kind of an odd name. Yeah.
Avangrid, right. But anyway, you know, this really is a story that we have been following for a couple of years now. You know, we have this environmental writer, Mary Douglas, and she was the first person that we know of who wrote an article about the fact that the way the ratepayers were being charged, well, there was something fishy and questionable legality about the fact that electric ratepayers were being charged for the pipeline, that there was a surtax on our electric bills to pay for the pipeline, which wasn't even going to serve us. And, you know, and now we've been following this story for a couple of years, and now these two companies have been sued, and according to our article...
Well, this is the second article. The first article laid out the reasons for this, which were that they were deliberately manipulating the supply of gas in order to justify the increase in electric rates. They were just manipulating the actual supply, and they used it both to up the rates and also to justify creating this pipeline or creating the perceived need for a pipeline, including that one that goes into Connecticut from Otis State Forest. So not only is there no need, but for this pipeline, but they've been, according to this lawsuit, and according to a study upon which it's based, these two companies overcharged their electric ratepayers by $3.6 billion. It's pretty amazing. It's the biggest scandal. It's one of the bigger scandals since Enron. Actually.
I was going to say Enron, if you remember back when California and all those western states had rolling power outages and brownouts, and because Enron was purposely causing it.
Right, because they were trading. It's like in a way, it's sort of like carbon credits. You trade the energy, and it rolls. And it's not exactly, I mean, is it kosher?
No, because it's not kosher, and I hope the judge sees it that way.
Yeah, me too. But
it's interesting. Anyways, this is all part of a series, you know, a whole topic, a whole field of inquiry that we've been doing for years now, on the need for this, the machinations of these large energy companies, including Kinder Morgan, Tennessee Gas, and their partners in crime. You know, Eversource and Avangrid and other, electric utilities. And, you know, and they, the thing is, you know, what's really disturbing is that they've completely fooled the business community here. I remember being at a business conference once, and one very smart entrepreneur here in Lee was telling me that, oh, we need more natural gas because that the electric rates are too high, and if we have more natural gas, the electric rates will come down. And it was absolutely the reason the electric rates were high was that the gas supply was actually being
manipulated,
yeah. Right?
Yeah,
unbelievable.
But
in a word,
yeah.
Right. Either manipulated or unbelievable in a word. But it's a really good story.
I want to move on though because we got started so late. I want to go and this is a problem that I have been talking about for a long, long time, and that is struggling how to regulate Airbnb and all these rental units now that are taking up space, and they don't have the same regulations as hotels do.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Do they pay the same meals and lodging tax. That's the other thing.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's the big thing that the town of Lenox has, is concerned about because they're not getting any revenue, and they rely on revenue from hotels. So
this is one of those law of unintended consequences things that
That's right.
There are arguments. We certainly had a situation here. What months? A year? I lose timing, so it could have been 18 months ago. But it's an ongoing situation because the people who do it are like, well, why can't we? And the people who run actual outfits are, well, because.
Yeah.
So.
I think Airbnb has been so much more successful than anybody ever anticipated. I mean, originally it was supposed to be, you could rent out an extra room in your house, but now people are buying houses just to turn them into Airbnb rentals.
It's called warehousing, and it is another thing that's not particularly kosher, but
it can be
done.
Yeah, no, it's putting pressure on the rental market, and it's also, it's putting pressure on the housing market because houses are less available, and it's certainly, I know, in bigger cities, this is the case in New York, there are, apartments that are being stockpiled for Airbnb, that means that the vacancy rate is even lower in big cities.
And the unintended consequence of all this is that it also puts the squeeze on affordable housing.
Yes.
Well, that's true, too. On the other hand, if you were a property owner and you were paying, say, high property taxes and you were looking for a way to kind of preserve your little house, and which maybe had an extra building associated with it, this might be an attractive alternative, is to have a little extra income, but
not to the mega scale which people are doing this.
I'm
playing the other side. That's all.
No, it's that there are two sides, and there's a point where you have to apply the because we can test.
You can rent out a little room in your house if you want to, but buying property and turning them into units, properties that can be used for other things, is just plain wrong.
Right.
Well, in my opinion, that side.
Yeah, in my opinion.
The town of Lenox is the one
grappling.
You're grappling with this. The fact was, Airbnb was boasting last summer about how many people who were going to Tanglewood had taken advantage of the Airbnbs in Lenox. And this is what prompted the town to say, what is going on here? And, had they just kept their mouth shut, I wonder if any this whole issue would have been just kept quiet. But be that as it may, now they're dealing with these short-term rentals.
All right. I want to move on here to the story out of Great Barrington, the Community Preservation Fund.
Oh, yeah. The Community Preservation Fund is permitted by the Community Preservation Act. And what it does is it puts a surcharge. If a community votes to join the Community Preservation Act and adopt it, there's a slight surcharge on the property taxes, and it goes basically into a kind of rainy day fund, which is matched by the state. And then they can use that for three purposes. They can use it for historic preservation, affordable housing, or recreational projects. And so Great Barrington is one of the towns that adopted it a few years ago after some contentious arguments. What happens is that this time of year, people with projects in those three categories come before the Community Preservation Commission and propose whatever they want to do, and the commission then chooses a few, and at town meeting in May, people vote whether or not to accept it. But this year, they have like $1 million worth of projects, but they estimate they're only going to have $500,000 to spend this year. So it's
nevertheless, $500,000 is quite a bit for these kinds of projects. So it's very nice.
Yeah, it is. It's for example, the town hall, the steps on the historic town hall in Great Barrington are really in bad shape, becoming almost unsafe. Well, this is the kind of thing that they can be repaired via the funds collected in this way. So it's and there are also three recreation hiking trails that are also being proposed. One a rather interesting proposal that would go from the Riverwalk in the center of Great Barrington all the way down to the fairgrounds and to the senior center, so that there would be a walkway along the river for people to stroll and enjoy that beautiful area, and senior citizens as well. So, this is something that probably might not be done if there weren't these funds available. So, it seems like a useful thing. I know in Stockbridge, for instance, they repaired the town clock, which is a big clarion in front of the Congregational Church, and it was broken. And with the CPC funds, they were able to fix it. So there you go.
All right, I've got a special thing for this. Okay.
Yes. What?
The saga of the Berkshire Museum continues live on theberkshireedge.com.
You know, this is such a soap opera, isn't it? I mean, you're right.
Therefore, the music.
This is Ma Perkins or whatever those. Maybe we should get a sponsor for this, like Oxidol or
Palmolive.
Right.
It's not funny, but it is. It is. It is absolutely amazing.
Yes.
You know, it's absolutely amazing.
Well, there's still a stay on the sale, so that or an injunction against it, which lasts, I think, until December 11th.
Right.
So the story is unresolved, and and people continue to wonder what's going to happen and comment on it. So we have a very interesting story by our history writer, Carol Owens, who talks about the museum as it has existed for 100 years, and reminds us that in 2008, the museum, the story about the museum, just to back up a little bit, is that they're trying to sell about 40 works of art, including two Norman Rockwells, and it's the Rockwells, of course, that have generated this terrible emotional response. Because
the Rockwells, let us say, were not purchased by the museum, but were rather donated to the museum by the Rockwell estate in order to for the benefit and enjoyment and illumination of Berkshire residents. So they weren't given to a museum or to the Norman Rockwell Museum or to private collectors. This was a generous gesture by Norman Rockwell. And so people feel that selling that art, as well as the other art that has been given to the museum, it violates the trust that the that by which these gifts were given. So that's the argument.
Right. And so, you know, what Carol Owens is saying is, and what the museum wants to do, which I think is a very I personally think is a very interesting idea, was to try to transform the museum from kind of a general purpose museum as it is now to a STEM center, you know, science, technology, engineering, and math. And they want this money to you know, implement programs for the, you know, in the service of local Pittsfield kids to give them better education and STEM subjects. And Carol is reminding people that the Feigenbaum Foundation gave $2.5 million in 2008 for, you know, for STEM activities, for new construction and interactive exhibitions designed to create wonder among children and adults, but they were, you know, tending towards STEM subjects. So her conclusion is, you know, don't pursue a failed path, get your assets back, protect and preserve them, hire trained and motivated staff, do the basic work of a museum, that is, display assets for the enrichment of the visitors. And then she says, best of luck for the next 100 years. So, you know, it's too bad that this, you know, I am still wondering how this all went so wrong, because I know some people on the museum board, and they are, you know, they are sincere and well-meaning people who really believe that this institution would serve the community much better if it were intensified in certain subjects. And for some reason, you know, this whole thing has become such a provocation of the community, and I really don't understand what went
wrong. Well, I do. What happened is that the board didn't tell anybody they were doing this. It was all done behind closed doors.
And then they sprung the idea out.
Then
the
they
open.
Sprung the idea. Yeah. And had they said, look, we have an idea to enhance our museum.
But the only way to do this is X.
This is what it's going to cost. This is what it's going to do. And, you know, they should do a capital campaign the way any other nonprofit institution would do it. You write a capital campaign, and then you enlist the community to support it. And they didn't do any of that.
Hmm. Or, if you want to add to that, you could also say, hey, this is a way we would like to do it. What's your, you know, you could talk about it prior to, and shall we say, test the waters.
Well, you know what? They could also do it the old-fashioned way, which is fundraising, you know?
What?
Boy,
what's that?
Fundraise.
Boy, do
if
we
the
know.
Idea is so good and the public is so in need of this, then maybe they would, you know, support it with donations if the argument were persuasive enough.
Okay.
But they didn't do that.
Well, we are out of time, believe it or not.
What? Well, yes. Wait a minute.
You were shorted. There's no question.
You were shorted because we had that problem with communication at the beginning by 3.5 to 4 minutes.
Well, do we have time to just quickly breeze over our last couple of
topics?
You have about
60 seconds where we can do it.
Oh. Well, go ahead, David.
Okay, I want to say that we have a hilarious poem by Jonathan Hankin, who is a member of the Planning Commission in Great Barrington, about the debris and litter that's along the roads that walks during the day. And then we finally also have I just want to mention that well-known ecologist Sandra Steingraber is giving a talk at Lenox Memorial High School on Saturday, December 2nd, on fracked gas, PCBs, and our health, and how these environmental challenges are affecting our public health. And
she has a personal story.
She has a personal story. She herself is a cancer survivor and wrote a personal account of this by a book called Living Downstream, in which she talks about how she grew up downstream from a river that had been contaminated and caused her cancer. So anyway, she's really terrific, and so I urge people, if they're interested in this wide-ranging topic, to go see her at Lenox Memorial High School late Saturday. I think it begins at 5:00.
All right. Guys, thanks a lot. Sorry for the pile-up in the beginning.
But there's always next week.
All right. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Have a good week.
Feel better.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
You'll find out more on these stories and more 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at theberkshireedge.com on the web.